Hey everyone, it's Cam Hurt, host of the Best Show Ever podcast, and we have got a second season coming out very soon that I am very excited about. We've got some very cool special guests, including musical acts that we all love, like Karina Reichman, Daniel Donato, Jake Brownstein from Eggy, Rick and Peter from Goose, and many more. Tune in for new episodes dropping on Osiris Media March 5th on the Best Show Ever podcast.
Osiris.
Welcome to Wheels Off, a show about the messy reality of the creative life. I'm Rhett Miller.
That's when it got wheels off. We started up and we ain't gonna stop. Us, I like it or not. That's when it got wheels off.
Neil Francis is so great, you guys. Look, I want you to listen to this episode of Wheels Off right now. I don't want you to wait, but if you want to take five and go acquaint yourself with the music of Neil Francis and then return to this episode better informed, who am I to disavow you of such a great idea? Because his music is lovely. It's so cool. It's such a little, well, whatever. I go on at length in the interview about this too. I feel like he creates spaces with his music, and stuff will come up in the interview that will sort of maybe explain why that's a thing. Neil joins us from his apartment in Chicago to talk about a life in music, twists and turns that led him to where he is now, the tricks that he's figured out to stay alive, to stay present, mindful. This is a great conversation. A guy I did not know before our record label, we're both on the same record label, ATO. They had just released his new album, In Plain Sight. And John Salter, the brilliant guy that runs our label, recommended that I talk to him, said I might like this guy. And boy, was he right. Neil Francis is the real deal, and he's so cool, and he's, you know, a sweetheart of a guy. And like I said, the music's fantastic. His first album, Changes, is, you know, widely regarded as an incredible debut, and rightfully so. And his new album, In Plain Sight, just came out. You guys are going to love it. Please welcome to the program, Neil Francis. But first, let's take a moment to hear from our sponsors. Wheels Off has sponsors. Who knew? It's great. This helps make sure that the folks who edit and work behind the scenes on Wheels Off don't have to work for free. So let's stop down for a moment to hear from the Wheels Off sponsors. Welcome to Wheels Off, Neil Francis. Thank you so much for joining me. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, Brett. Thank you for having me here, man.
For the edification of our listeners, where are you joining from?
I'm in Chicago, in the Pilsen neighborhood on the south side.
Nice. I love, and you, and this is going to be primarily an audio format, or entirely an audio format, so they're not going to be able to see the beautiful blue wall behind you. I love that.
Yeah, we came in and my girlfriend and I painted the whole apartment. I've never painted an apartment before. It's usually your landlord needs you to paint it back, but this time it's such a tiny apartment that we're like, we're just gonna go nuts. So one room is like dark red, one room is blue, our bedroom's like deep dark green, and the kitchen's yellow. It's fantastic.
Did you do any like research into the meanings and effects of the colors? Did you wing it?
I definitely winged it at the Home Depot paint department. Just we were picking out, hey, Moroccan red looks great. Like,
and this by the way, this is not what the whole interview is going to be about, but I am fascinated. You can see I'm sitting.
We can go as deep into this as you want, honestly.
But then I wonder, like, how long ago did you move in and paint all those colors?
That was in, I think, August. We moved in here.
Okay, so this is post-pandemic, church, or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. So good. So you, because I just, I guess my question was, because you've got a lot of dark colors, and I'm wondering if you're trapped in your place a lot, do you end up feeling like, do you need more brightness? This is just my...
No. So I'm not here a lot. I think the colors are really working for us.
The blue is beautiful.
Thank you.
Cool tones. what creative project are you working on right now, Neil, and how does it light you up?
Right now, I'm not really actively working on any music. I'm like sort of absorbing a lot of music and absorbing a lot of literature, and focusing on our tour. And yeah, I'd say I'm in the earliest stages of like thinking about my next record, because our current record just came out on November 5th. So recently I took a plane from San Francisco to Chicago, and I always get a lot of good ideas on the plane, also because I was like meditating for half the flight and then came out of that and was like tripping, you know, in a good way. Like I just started scribbling down all these notes, and I'm like waiting to get into the studio, which I think I'm going to relocate soon anyway. So,
oh really? To where? You
think? Yeah.
Undecided.
Currently, I have a very humble studio rig set up in, it's called Belmont Cragen, which is about 35 minutes away from where I am now, like on the opposite end of Chicago.
That's a hike.
And I know you've spent some time here, so like the traffic is really something else, and it takes a real like force of will to get up there. And I've recently been talking to a buddy who lives like a 10-minute walk from my apartment, maybe putting my studio there should make it more advantageous, you know.
And it would get you out walking.
Yes, indeed. And not driving.
How long was the record in the can before it came out in November 5th, on November 5th?
I think we were like wrapped with mixes and masters by February or March of this year.
So pretty normal, maybe a little longer than a normal lead time. Yeah, I don't think people realize that as much, that when you wrap a record that you have to wait then like 4-6 months for it to drop. And that can be a pretty harrowing time. Did you do okay?
I rode a wave of like, you know, just, I really didn't like it for a while.
Oh no.
Well,
the album.
Yeah, I was like, I knew I liked it, but I was like just terrified about certain aspects of it. And I was really like getting upset about certain things. And then this is sort of something I always do, so I'm getting used to it. But I came around. I had to stop listening to it because, as you know, it's like during the mixing phase and the mastering phase, it's just constantly listening to it over and over again. So it was good to take a break, and it was a long break. It was like a couple months at least before I listened to it again.
Step away. Sometimes I think about, well, I was in high school and one of the teachers was this kooky old dude who smoked a lot. You know, back then he would smoke, and this is the 80s. He would smoke in his office and the kids would be in there with him just getting... secondhand. And at one point he decided to quit. So he went down to Mexico with a suitcase filled with cartons of cigarettes. And he got like a shitty room in Juarez, Mexico, and didn't leave it, and just smoked cigarette after cigarette after cigarette. So that when he flew back home, the idea of smoking made him want to barf. And so he never smoked again. And sometimes it's what you're saying. Sometimes when I'm going through the mixing mastering phase of a record, and after having been in the studio recording it, like, I kind of wonder if that effect is happening. Like, okay, now I'm soured on this because I've literally overdosed.
Yeah, it's like aversion therapy. Yeah. Have you heard of that?
Oh yeah, of course.
Like, yeah, it's like, I don't know, man. I'm back to a healthy place with it. I did a promo at our old, we used to be on a label called Coal Mine Karma mm-hmm. Chief in Loveland, Ohio. And I was at the record store there, Plaid Room. And the owner, Terry, had it on. And it was like the first time I'd listened to it on vinyl in the store. And I was just like, all right, yeah.
Yes.
I dig this. All right.
Oh. So. Oh, man, you know it's good. I wonder, because it seems to me like so much of your, because you started really young and you are regarded as being an incredible live performer and an incredible like improviser. Like, I wonder, I think, right? This is the book on you from what I get. Like, you're just a fucking incredible keys player. And I wonder if, like, so much of it is happening in the moment and later on, like, it's not meant to be overly thought out. It's like just this experiential thing. And then it's captured on an album. I mean, you obviously write songs as well and build arrangements, but I wonder if the improviser in you rubs up against the, you know, recorded music situation. Is that weird?
Well, I don't know. No, that's a great, for this record, had the opportunity to, well, as a necessity of the pandemic, I was working on the demos by myself, which before this, I had been working with my friend Mike Novak, who engineered In Plain Sight. However, yeah, for this, I got a Otari 8-track and just like a 16 channel mixer. And I had all my Rode gear set up in the basement of where I was living and learned how to like engineer my own recordings, which I had never been able to do. So that was less of like I'm always approaching it from like a arrangement song sort of standpoint. There's like open sections, I guess.
Yeah.
You know,
playgrounds.
Yeah. You know,
and I mean, those demos for In Plain Sight wound up becoming something that people love, like as much as the record almost. It's like they're their own very cool thing, right?
The Changes demos is what
we got. The Changes demos.
Yeah. Like out on, like that. That's what I did with Mike Novak, and yeah. They have a special quality. Yeah. Yeah. I think there's something. I kind of want to release the reel that I was working with for this most recent record.
Uh-huh.
Because I've got like a half inch tape reel that's just me, you know? And I actually really enjoy listening to that. And I'm wondering if there's a way if I can have someone, like, it would have to be like an active mix, you know, wow. Throughout. But I don't know. I think that might be worth releasing someday. Is what I'm saying.
Oh man! So you started really young. From what I understand, you were out there playing in clubs and stuff pretty young. And I wonder about the genesis of you. I wonder about if there was a moment you realized you were going to be a musician full time. I wonder if there was an epiphany moment, or if it was just something that you always knew.
Yeah, I can't really say that I thought that I was going to be a full-time musician. And if I thought I was going to be a full-time musician, my expectations were more that I would be like a sort of jobbing musician, because that was sort of more the gigs I was playing, especially in my earlier 20s, you know, I was a sideman in a lot of blues bands and wedding bands and, you know, random jam bands around town. And nobody really had like a foothold nationally or internationally that I was working with in Chicago. So also just like, I don't know, my attitude towards it was like, I can't actually do this. You know, that's sort of what I felt like for most of my 20s, until when I was like 26 or 27, I really just started getting serious about it. And then, you know, met my manager and then things started to like actually materialize in terms of this project, Neil Francis. But prior to that, yeah, I think it was just like, I need something to survive on. And music is the easiest way to do that because, you know, all I have to do is show up and play. So.
And you started when you were really little learning, right? Like, and you, did you want to, or was this a parent forced thing?
I definitely wanted to. I definitely, when I was
You'd younger, have to.
Yeah. Well, no, I was like, I was playing all the time, you know, I just by ear, like learning stuff and, yeah, just it's, fascinated.
It's so funny to hear, for me to hear you describe the life of a sideman that you were living. Because when I listen to your stuff, like you seem like the ultimate front man. Like your songs are great. Your voice is great. You look like, you know, I just, how could it ever have been like not super obvious? Was it a weird transition to make? Did you have to hurdle some sort of self-doubt or insecurity when you did this, made the jump?
Yeah, absolutely. It's been like a process of being comfortable with myself and being comfortable in my own skin and being comfortable around other people, you know, without like, you know, frankly, you know, for a long time, drinking helped me interact with people and feel more comfortable.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just, you know, it took me a long time without that to then gather those things, like feel that way genuinely and without sort of external medicine, you know? I don't know. It's been a long kind of, it also just has to do with a little bit just of, you know, the environment in which I was raised, that, you know, loving parents who gave me every opportunity, but just, there was also sort of this skepticism around a career in music, you know, that really, really got into my consciousness, like seeped into my consciousness. So I didn't believe that anything was possible. And still I check myself, I'm like, well, that's never going to happen. You know, like stuff will be on the calendar and I'll just be like, that's not real. Like you suck. And then now I have like another voice that's like, shut up, dude. Just like breathe. And I don't know.
Well, dude, I love that. My favorite part of these conversations is talking about those self-generated obstacles. And you've already brought up a couple of the, because when I ask folks about it, the thing that I really want to know isn't like, what do you go through? Because it kind of all winds up being some variation of the similar thing. What I really want is like, what have you figured out as a way to like push through it or get around it or over it? And you've already brought up a couple of things that come up a lot, which meditation is one of them that comes up a lot. I've loved that and have done a lot. I was inducted into transcendental meditation when I was a teenager, and have benefited from it a lot. But another thing that comes up a lot that you brought up is sobriety, which I'm 6 years sober. And it's funny because when you're on the other side of it, folks, I won't ascribe this to anyone else, but I used to think when people would say they were sober, I would think, oh, that's so sad. Like,
right?
Yeah. Like all the fun parts of their life are over now and they just have to sit around and be boring.
never talking to you again. Yeah.
Exactly.
What are you doing here?
And then you get on the other side. And I mean, I wonder if your experience is the same. And you're like, oh my God, this is so great. Like the clarity and the beauty and the presence is so much better.
Yeah. I've also got around 6 years. So congrats. But yeah, I never imagined life could be just this good, really. And that goes for before I even started drinking, because I had all these struggles with anxiety and fear, depression as a child, not knowing what those things were and not knowing how to mitigate them in a healthy way. So it was always just like reaching for something external. And so I believe that my path was like, okay, sobriety, but then within sobriety, leading me to like mindfulness and meditation. And that is really what has brought me like lasting peace and stability, and makes me just like, you know, an effective person. I don't know, whatever that means, or just a more happy person, more peaceful person.
And so it sounds like, in a way, the this sort of Neil Francis frontman songwriter project pretty much coincides with your sobriety and your journey into mindfulness. Well, it's great. It's funny. I can really hear it in the music. I really feel like there's I mean, not even just lyrically, which is the thing I usually focus on, but just musically, I just feel like there's such a, I don't know, like, again, it's hard to talk about music, but I do feel like that your mindfulness, your presence, like it's very reflected in the music. Like it feels like experiential, I guess is the word that when I listen to your stuff, that's what I come to. I feel like I'm in a, well, I guess the word vibe has gotten cheapened over the years, but you feel like you're in a room, it's painted blue, like you're in this space. It's like, it's a really beautiful thing you've created. Anyway, that's
thanks,
not
man.
I had a question.
Well, speaking of space, I really have enjoyed looking at the space behind you. Is that like a Gibson hummingbird on the wall?
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
It's my little office in the garage that was kind of just a storage room until the pandemic let me turn it into.
So the black phone and the red phone is one of those for like the nuclear strike and like the other is just for house calls.
Yeah. So for the audio only listeners, I'm in my office. It's just where I do, like I was during the pandemic until very recently doing 4 streaming concerts a week from this seat. And
whoa.
Yeah. And so towards the end of each one, I would go to the phones and take a request. And so I have all these just random phones around to go to. But yeah, it's good. It's nice to have a space. And I'm glad you're going to get to one that's closer, because 35 minutes is too far. That could be a daunting travel. So I love this sort of life in music that you've lived. Oh, I wanted to ask too, because you did at least a couple of years of proper schooling, like in college, right?
Yeah. Well,
so, how'd that happen?
I went to school for architecture at UIC, which is University of Illinois, Chicago. And I'm super passionate about architecture. I grew up in Oak Park, Illinois, which is right down the street from, well, there's like 40 Frank Lloyd Wright buildings there. And there's also just, you know, a great collection of like turn of the 20th century buildings. And yeah, that's where I grew up. And I was just fascinated, particularly with like how Frank Lloyd Wright integrated art glass and sculpture and furniture into the overall complete building design. And so, for some reason in my mind, it's very similar to music, architecture. But that's sort of what I took a lot of architecture classes in high school, and then I was, you know, a freshman at UIC. I did really well my freshman year, and then like got more into extracurricular distractions. And like any college discipline requires your full attention, but especially like a studio class where I was like living in the studio for architecture. Trying to do that while like partying a lot was basically impossible. So I got asked to leave UIC when I was 21. And that's when I pursued music for a little while. But it was a long and winding road, you know. I have a puzzle in front of me. This is the picture for the puzzle. This is a Frank Lloyd Wright design.
I've got a journal where I do my morning pages somewhere around here that it's a Frank Lloyd Wright journal that's got all that kind of stuff where you get the feeling that he would just sit and doodle, right? Those really beautiful, symmetrical, jeweled looking, like the colors. I'm a big fan. There's a T.C. Boyle novel about Frank Lloyd Wright that's pretty insane.
I mean, what's it called?
He's a great writer. It's been a long time. I don't know. I would have to Google it. But I won't look at it up right now. We'll let the listeners investigate this on their own.
clever, yes.
So it's funny. So I are you familiar with John Bryan, the producer, soundtracker? He's an LA guy. Now he almost does exclusively soundtracks for movies, but he did like a bunch of early Fiona Apple records and.
Mm, cool.
Anyway, I got to make a record with John, and at one point he described to me the way he approached music, and he said that it was architecture, and he said that in his mind he was constantly building these structures and looking ahead at what the structure was going to need to, you know, stand up. And it's funny because now you say that, in just a moment ago I said like listening to your music is like living in a space. That's what it feels like to me. It feels like there's this crazy like crystalline impossible structure being constantly built up around you and then sort of disappearing behind you. So the architecture thing I can totally see.
That sounds sweet. Yeah, man. That's awesome. I like sometimes think of it as like, you know, your rhythm section is like a foundation, mm-hmm. and the groove overall is like, you know, the overall like structure or skeleton of the building, and then any sort of auxiliary instrumentation or, you know, additional overdubs is like your ornamentation, you know. And Chicago certainly has a great tradition in music and architecture, so
yeah. And then what are the lyrics? Are the lyrics like the view out the window?
Well, the lyrics is sort of, I mean, it can be the purpose of the space, like the functionality of the space is communicated through the lyrics, you know, if it's a hospital, if it's a railroad station, you know.
I love it. All right. So this is very cool. And I feel like you've shared a ton of good wisdom. Before I let you go, I'm going to ask you to sort of distill that wisdom and think back on yourself at 21. Like you already described that being a sort of tumultuous period. But I wonder if you could run into yourself at 21, but in today's world, so a few years later, technologically and socially, if you could give yourself any advice, your 21-year-old self, any advice, what would you tell yourself?
Oh, man. Don't hedge your bets. Just do what you want to do, and whatever that means for you right now, do it to the fullest extent that is possible, whatever makes you fulfilled.
Do you think that means don't give yourself a safety net so that you can quit if it gets tough?
Yeah, I think that's what I was always doing. when I, especially at that age, you know, just like, oh, I'll fall back on X if Y doesn't pan out, you know, and that's not really a way to be successful. It's like, you know, fail at one thing at a time, but, you know, really commit to failing.
Oh my God, that's gonna be, if I ever make a book out of my favorite lines, fail at one thing at a time, but really commit to failing. That's fantastic.
Oh, thanks, man.
Oh, Neil, this is so cool. I can't wait till I get to see you play in real life. Congrats on the new record. Congrats on whatever is next. It's all great, and I really appreciate your time here on Wheels Off today.
Thanks for having me, Rhett. It's been a pleasure.
All right. Thank you so much for listening to Wheels Off. Please be sure to rate and review the show on iTunes. That helps us appear higher in the search results and lets other folks know that it's a cool podcast to listen to. Also, as the kids say, don't forget to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or anywhere else that you listen to shows like this so that you never miss an episode. This has been Wheels Off, and I'm Rhett Miller, encouraging you to create every day. Thanks, y'all.
Osiris.
What's up, everybody? I am Finn McKenty, host of the Punk Rock NBA podcast, part of the Sound Talent Media podcast network. My podcast is all about doing what you love for a living, and every week I sit down and talk to people who have done exactly that. For example, musicians like Tommy from Between the Buried and Me, Matt from Periphery, Lil Lotus and Shinigami, among many others, photographers, artists, designers, YouTubers like Glenn Fricker and Sarah Dici, and I unpack exactly how they got to where they are today with the goal of helping you do the same. So if that sounds cool, you can listen and subscribe at soundtalentmedia.com, and I'll see you there.